I'm Dan Carell with DCA Card Links, and this is Commerce Code, a bi-weekly digital commerce podcast for leaders in card linking, loyalty and digital marketing, mobile wallets and payments, and financial data. Thanks for joining this running conversation with leaders in the industry. And if this podcast is helpful to you, come join us at a DCA Card Links event. You can learn more at www.digcomall.org. You have made it to the third installment in our three-part series on intelligent shopping agents, an extended conversation with Sean Conahan of Wildfire Systems. In the first episode, Sean laid out what intelligent shopping agents are. And in the second episode, he and I talked about how they will affect payments, consumers, and merchants. At the end of that episode, I had just asked Sean how they would affect loyalty programs. And since Wildfire Systems is a key player in the loyalty market, Sean's answer won't disappoint you. He's thought about this a lot, and his answer's thoroughly researched. Let's pick up the conversation where we left off. So, Sean, what does this all mean for loyalty programs? Commerce Code is brought to you in part by VantageScore. 8 of the top 10 banks and over 3,400 leading banks and fintechs use VantageScore to predict and manage repayment risk. Learn more about the latest advances in credit scoring and how to grow your lending business by leveraging financial inclusion at VantageScore.com.
That is the question I was hoping you'd ask, because this is where we at Wildfire spend most of our time thinking about the future. And I'm developing the point of view that we're best positioned to enable and capitalize on this evolution. I think that is similarly true for our DCA CardLinks members in general. So I said before I wanted to come back to monetization, so I'd like to start there. And without any hubris, I can confidently say that my company, Wildfire, is the gold standard loyalty platform for financial institutions. It's not a brag. It's just that when you build a platform company, that platform necessarily becomes what your most important customers need it to be. And among our most important customers are financial institutions. More importantly, financial services have the highest adoption and highest value loyalty programs of any other industry on the planet. Recent Ipsos poll, it was May 2024, found that 71% of Americans possess a rewards credit card. And among these cardholders, 80% value the rewards they receive. The Wildfire annual primary research white paper from last summer further found that 74% of respondents increased their use of money-saving tactics last year in light of economic anxiety, and fully 81% of them expected to receive loyalty rewards from their primary trusted financial institution. And at the same time, the financial services sector has recognized the value of loyalty programs in fostering customer engagement and driving revenue, investing billions annually. I know this because from where I sit, I see the strategic plans of almost every major financial institution in the Western Hemisphere. Every single one of them is asking the same question right now. How do I retain loyalty in a future where the links on the value chain are shifting and the customer relationship may not belong to me anymore? So in a possible future world where commerce may not directly involve the very merchants that we have worked so hard to develop relationships with, and a hyperscaler like Facebook could add payments or checkout as a feature, like, how's this all going to pan out? And here's the interesting thing. For all of the really exciting news and market-moving partnerships being announced lately, along with a pace of technological innovation that has to be tracked in literal days, not even weeks, what is conspicuously missing is monetization. Nobody mentioned it at all, like in their press releases. They're doing some great stuff, but how's it going to be monetized? Here's a comparison. The first Uber ride that you took was $5. Today, that same ride is $100 because that company is no longer being subsidized by nearly unlimited VC money. AI is in a similar stage right now where the only thing that matters is investment in the technology and scale, and we're going to worry about how to monetize it later. Well, at Wildfire, monetization is all we think about, and we have a comprehensive plan to foundationally enable the monetization of this entire ecosystem. So before I mentioned Visa, giving tokens to shopping agents. In the five-party system, Visa makes maybe 15 basis points, maybe 20 on a transaction. If Amias at QED is right, and we're adding up to 6 more participants in that business model, how are they going to get paid? And through what mechanism? Let me read you a quote from Sam Altman. He said recently this when asked about ads in OpenAI, quote, "If you buy something through deep research that you found, we're going to charge like a 2% affiliate fee or something. That would be cool. I'd have no problem with that." Now, remember, the shopping agents don't have eyeballs or emotions. And as a merchant, you're going to shift your marketing spend in the direction that optimizes revenue and profitability. That means less on display ads and more on performance marketing. It's the purest expression of marketing spend in an algorithmic world, and merchant-funded loyalty and rewards programs are poised to grow. Companies that want to participate in this future commerce paradigm, from AI interfaces to merchants to payments providers, they're all going to find that all roads lead to Rome for monetization. But don't take my word for it. A February 2025 article in the Harvard Business Review called AI Agents Are Changing How People Shop, Here's What That Means for Brands. It did a great job of describing the shift. It lays out how marketing dollars will increasingly shift to performance-based models like affiliate marketing as agentic commerce scales. Among other things, the article introduces the concept of AAO, or AI Agent Optimization, as the new SEO, or Search Engine Optimization. An article in Hostinger from April of 2025 lays out some eye-opening affiliate marketing statistics. The global affiliate marketing industry is valued at $18.5 billion today. It's projected to grow to $31.7 billion by 2031, driven by increasing adoption by business and content creators. At Wildfire, for our part, we believe there is an emerging two-tier loyalty structure that we're optimizing for our partners and merchants. According to eMarketer, 70% of shoppers express interest in AI agents that help optimize loyalty points. So our product roadmap includes tools that cater both to the shopping agent with its particular set of rules and ethics and the master it serves, the consumer, who has an unprecedented opportunity to maximize their accrual of whatever secondary currency they like, whether it's points, miles, cashback, whatever, through very intentional and programmatic deployment of their loyalty to particular brands. A real-world example from me is that when planning travel, my shopping agent must prioritize my beloved Alaska Airlines first, American Airlines second, and specifically exclude Delta and United. And as long as I'm accruing monetary rewards at a level I find satisfactory, I'll go out of my way to deploy my loyalty at these brands. And that means the best way for Sam Altman to deliver on his very fair 2% affiliate fee model is to tap into the existing loyalty ecosystem where all of those pathways are already established. Same for Visa, MasterCard, Google, Facebook, etc. But OpenAI as a company, they're just not experts in the affiliate ecosystem. So I think partnership with this foundational layer of monetization comprised of many of the DCA CardLynx members seems inevitable.
Again, recurring to the possibility of the importance of antitrust in the future, I would just like to say that my AI agent in the future will, just like his master, bow to the absolute ownership of Delta of my local hub. And so there will be no Alaska Airlines joy for me, even in that world. But, that's joking, but also like very real, right? Like it's the more you have transactional smoothness in any given market and information costs are low, basically, the more people are going to do whatever they need to do in order to create margin. And of course, one of those things is market concentration. And so I do expect, we've been through a long period of really not talking about market concentration and antitrust for a lot of reasons having to do with University of Chicago economists. But I think that era is ending, and this is probably one of those reasons. And so, you know, it's like there's just so many factors in play. As I said before, you know, it's like on the one hand, so much is changing and maybe going away. On the other hand, nearly all of it still exists. And so retailers, merchants are still going to be marketing their products because there's people who have that job. And if they don't do it, then, you know, their glide path is going to be even shorter. And they may discover along the way some magic that keeps them going for a long time. Right. And so how do you think retailers are going to market their products differently if what we're doing is we're buying inside an AI interface?
Yeah. This gets back to what I said before about merchants needing to have pristine product level data, with a two-track focus on both discoverability and personalization. So retailers will go from SEO, SEM, and influencer reach to things like agent feed optimization, or AFO. Instead of emotional brand storytelling, they will focus more on product spec clarity and incentives. Visuals and brand feel will give way to machine-readable metadata. Broad targeting will shift toward precision context and personalization. Ad spend will shift from awareness to conversion triggers. Display ads and search ads lose value. They'll be replaced with affiliate commissions, rev shares, and agent ranking fees, that sort of thing. Product data becomes marketing. SKU level purchase data becomes personalization. And it's worth noting right now that Wildfire is just one of the few companies operating in commerce that gets SKU level data just as a matter of course because of what we do. Like if you buy $100 of stuff at Walmart and maybe it's three things, return one, we have to back out the loyalty points that you might have earned on that. So we get the SKU level data. The networks and the issuers don't even get it. Wells Fargo may know that I spent $100 at Walmart, but they don't know the specific items I bought, you know, but we do. So a long time ago, we made the strategic decision not to sell that data as crude oil. And that was a really good decision because it keeps our ecosystem in a safe harbor. This year, though, we've decided to productize that data for our individual partners. We're not going to sell it like crude oil, but for our individual partners like Citi, RBC, and others to help our ecosystem deliver on the second of the two tracks I just mentioned, personalization. So a critically missing component to inform these shopping agents is shopping and purchase history so that it can learn over time. And we're introducing that component into our ecosystem this year for that purpose, but also for our direct partners to develop individualized demand curves, regardless of whether it is for an agent or a human. So I think all of these shifts are going to factor into how retailers market their products differently. To your point, you're still going to market it. You've just got to shift the context in which you do it.
I guess it's interesting you comment on why you guys have SKU level data. And it's I just want to say that you owe a little something to people like my wife. I'm a dude. And so I don't return things. Like if I buy a piece of clothing and I get home and it's still a piece of clothing, like it hasn't turned into something else, I'm not going to return it because I'm like, well, I don't know. It's a shirt. I think I have the view that there's only one cleaning product necessary on earth and it's Windex or whatever else it was that I just bought. It's fine. It's wet. It seems to, I don't care. But anyway, my wife though, she's the reason you need the SKU level data for her, because trust me, like I can't even figure out whether the stuff in the back of the car is coming or going. And sometimes it's both. I don't understand that anyway. So you're right though. And it's very, it's such an interesting, that's a whole nother podcast about like, do you sell it as crude oil? Is it commodified? Is it whatever? And it's just like the, whatever. All short version is you made the right call in my view. I want to step back and take like a skeptical take on this because like most things, as I like to say, you know, I'm like the downer in my family. I'm like, well, you know, the thing about small businesses is that they all die pretty quickly, right? You know, you see some exciting new shop. We live in the city, like just, you know, it's like around the corner or whatever. And it's like, yeah, that's awesome. Let's go try it before they die. And so most things don't fly the way that you sort of think they will. And so I'll take the example of like for this, let's call this, you know, agent retail. Even some listeners to Commerce Code may have missed that there was a thing called Buy on Google, which was discontinued in 2023. And it's exactly what it sounds like. Lots of very sophisticated companies have tried to sort of do, like to integrate another step in the value chain into integrate retail, integrate payments, whatever. And it just, for a lot of reasons, hasn't worked. I think we all remember that, you know, what Facebook had like a currency for a minute. I mean, a lot of this stuff. And so why is this different in your view? And because it seems to me like it is, but I'd love to hear your answer.
That is a great question and a bit of a cautionary tale because, as you point out, there are certainly some parallels to the potential agentic world we're discussing. But okay, so let's look at some facts about Google. Google is a beloved channel for consumers to start purchases, but not to finish them. And at that time, during the Buy on Google era, consumers preferred to click through to the merchants' websites. They provide loyalty programs, or maybe they like the low friction checkout provided by Amazon. Maybe they were able to get faster shipping or stronger guarantees by going direct to the merchants or whatever. There was confusion by consumers about where the transaction was happening with Buy on Google. And if there's a problem, do I call Google? I can tell you, nobody has ever successfully called Google, right? So there's a little anxiety there. The merchants also had a hard time with it. The maturity of the seller tools from Shopify, Amazon, and Walmart, that's just really got to be difficult to replicate. They're so mature. But really, what I understood from the merchants I talked to is that they simply didn't want to surrender the checkout experience to Google. So these are all similar headwinds to adoption of the shopping inside a chat bot. And you could argue that an autonomous shopping agent with a budget would be even harder for both consumers and merchants to get their heads around. But on the other hand, the Perplexity experience is an order of magnitude better than the Buy on Google experience. I don't know. Maybe Google is just a little too early and the technology is now here today to make it a reality. In contrast, Perplexity will integrate the shopping experience within a conversational framework, which is different from Google, right? Users interact with shopping agents that understand natural language queries and they provide personalized product recommendations. They can even complete transactions within the chat interface itself, like we mentioned at the top of the conversation. I think that approach transforms shopping from a search and click activity into a more interactive dialogue where the agent assists throughout the entire purchasing journey. The merchants may still be a bit at arm's length, but I agree, checkout ownership could be a hurdle here, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, getting the human behavior, so a conjecture or one way of thinking about it maybe is, if you can get humans to behave, like if you can get people to want something enough, if you can get enough people to want something enough, it's probably going to happen. Right. Now, I missed some of the history that led up to this because I put my Oculus Quest goggles on in 2021 and I just took them off last week. It was quite a surprise, actually, because it turns out that my family had left me, and which is disorienting because my Oculus wife was still around. But so there was some adjustments that had to be made. The point is, OK, if you can make something easy and if you can get people to want it, then I think the other things will probably get worked out, like is my just opinion for what it's worth. And there were some people like me, because I actually didn't put on Oculus Quest goggles ever. You know, there was just a lot of people who never wanted any of that stuff. It was actually quite remarkable to watch the industry because, you know, I always have a lot of self-doubt. I'm like, I could be wrong, but I don't think anyone wants to live in the like Oculus Quest world, right?
So Zuckerberg renamed his entire company to Meta, making this massive bet that right, there was going to be right, this metaverse. By the way, the lore is that he was influenced by reading the book Snow Crash, which was a dystopian, you know, novel. Like it wasn't a good idea. We don't want that future, you know.
Oh, good. We all die.
What a complete miss that was. Interesting.
So one of my maxims is, so one of the only things that I don't know who else is, if I've coined this or whatever, but like what I would just say is, social science doesn't know much, and I've spent both my academic and career life, whatever, if you will, in social science. What we do know is people talk about what's important and they do what's easy. And that second part is we really, really know that. And so Oculus Quest goggles struck me at the threshold as not easy. I don't know what happened once you were inside. I'm sure it was great, but apparently not great enough. The thing about this is that easy doesn't get even close to articulating what's happening with this when you first experience it, right? And that's why Google was just so, I mean, I remember the first time I used Google, and at the time I was at a sort of research consultancy, and I was like, oh, wait, we pretty much sell information. I think that's going to end, right? And it didn't end, but the point is like it got really easy to get information. So anyway, this makes it so easy to do the things you want to do transactionally and with loyalty, whatever else, that it just feels to me like that's there. So then the other thing that then happens when something like that becomes so apparent is in some cases, it's easier for an incumbent to adopt the thing than it is for, like, call it Perplexity or DeepSeek or ChatGPT to become like the incumbent, right? So, right. So it was like pets. So you got the pet sock puppet in whatever year that was for the Super Bowl. And it's like, okay, can some Silicon Valley people figure out how to create a retail pet store? Or could the people that know how to do Petco and PetSmart and whatever else adopt the technology? And right. And it's like there's still that tug of war going on. But at least in the first round of that boxing match, it was a clear knockout for the bricks and mortar folks. And so all of that is a wind up to say Amazon is, to your point, right? Smart people with lots of capabilities are watching this development. So like Amazon has to be working on creating this inside their ecosystem, or maybe they go and they acquire Perplexity. I don't know. And so how do you think about places like Amazon or others that just integrate this development into what they already offer?
So have you not used Rufus yet?
I have not. I mean, Rufus was my favorite stuffedy when I was 7.
To your point, I think they named it after someone's dog, like who was an early dog at Amazon or whatever. But yeah, this is, it's in beta.
I have not used the Rufus that you're talking
about. It's like in the upper left-hand corner of Amazon. It's in beta. And it does sort of what you want it to do. The UX is maybe a little bit off. To me, it feels like a bolt-on, and the results are slightly anemic. And I think it comes back to what I mentioned before. I think that their product data isn't structured for such a purpose. Now, surely Amazon must have the strongest product catalog on the planet, but if it was structured without all of the AI use cases in mind, the results are going to feel a bit more googly and a less bit like Perplexity. I'm glad you brought up Amazon, and I'm a little surprised we've gotten through this whole conversation without mentioning retail media. I mean, ultimately, what Amazon is trying to do all day, every day, is connect buyers with the things they want from sellers. And it was only 12 or so years ago that a much quainter version of Amazon simply enabled consumers to search for things to buy. Then I think probably some merchant somewhere said they'd be happy to pay a little extra to be put on the front page for a couple hours or maybe a nice slot or something like that. And retail media was born. And now at around, what, $50 billion in annual ad revenue, it's the third leg of Amazon's business. And as a consumer, I frankly find the ads to be contextually relevant. I think they're generally helpful. And, you know, more application of AI there has my vote. And I think you're right. As a consumer, you know, I wouldn't mind Amazon adding more on the other side of the equation. And maybe the next version of Rufus will be that. They're definitely moving in the right direction.
You were just talking long enough for me to type into Rufus, "I want a green sweater for myself for the dead of Minnesota winter." I will tell you, and I am lined, I've checked and I am logged in. It's like, "Hello, Daniel," whatever. So it knows that it's me. And it just now showed me a really long women's cardigan, a Minnesota hoodie. Okay, so it's not a sweater at all. It's definitely not green. And Amazon Essentials men's long sleeve looks like a sweater. So that's at least in the zone. So anyway, whatever. The point is, like, there's development yet to happen.
Right. Well, what Amazon apparently doesn't know about, unbelievably, the Amazon that you've been using for the past, whatever, 100 years, doesn't know enough about you to know that you're a male. Maybe your wife is shopping off the same, you know, account or something like that.
Yeah.
That's where you're getting
cardigans
or whatever.
Yeah, that's probably true. Yeah.
But this is the I think, hyper intelligence and personalization that these LLMs have the opportunity to build from the ground up. They don't have to deal with the legacy issues that the likes of Amazon may have. It's really interesting. And that's, you know, one path here is that because of that, Perplexity is able to draw consumers to its platform. And I think they will. They've certainly drawn me there. And the big win is that it enables consumers to shop across the entire internet, right? Via a single intelligent interface. I'm no longer locked into just the four walls of Amazon as an example or any one retailer. So that's definitely happening. But I think to the point you were making before, it really comes down to DNA, right? Perplexity is never going to have the commerce DNA that Amazon has. And Amazon is never going to have the AI DNA that Perplexity has. Yeah. So it seems like a match made in heaven, right? Except that it also seems highly unlikely that any of the top 10 hyperscalers or any of the top 10 challengers can reasonably establish meaningful relationships in a world where it's not enough that I must win. It's all those must lose, right? So there is a third possibility, like a hybrid or a networked model where retailers and AI platforms collaborate through open APIs or affiliate-like partnerships. I think in this model, consumers interact with their preferred agent, you know, which might be Perplexity, ChatGPT, something else. And the agent connects to merchant catalogs in real time to transact. Loyalty, rewards, fulfillment would still be handled by the merchants, but the user experience would be owned by the AI interface. You can see this kind of shared ownership thing. I think ultimately the market path may hinge on who owns the customer relationship and who's best positioned to balance convenience, trust, and value. Whether that's Amazon or an AI platform or some federated network of merchants with some glue holding them together, I think really remains to be seen.
this is at the intersection of so many things that, everybody I think cares about, if they don't yet, they'll need to. And we used to say, as I mentioned, I was at a research consultancy for a long time when a big thing happened. And, in the world of just because of marketing and everything, it's like it's actually not that often that a big thing happens. Right. Like a tectonic thing. And I think it's pretty clear that this is one of those. I'm grateful for the amount of thought and effort you've put into both this conversation, but just the topic in general. We used to say when an actual big thing came along that there was food for many winters. And there is, right? Like from the perspective of, analyzing it, understanding it, working through it, it's not just a very often what you do is some new development would come along. And if you will, you'd put it in a pot and boil it and then look and say, there's kind of nothing there, right? It's just kind of another version of what we've been through a million times before. This, I think, is disruptive at a pretty tectonic level. And I think you've done a terrific job in this of just this conversation of kind of just laying out at least the nodes, right, of like all the major ways that it can go. So we look forward to continuing the conversation. Sean, grateful to you and the team at Wildfire for really putting the thought into this. And I have already, while you're talking, started to take the content of what we've been talking about, stuck it into Notebook LM, which is one of my preferred tools. And it has made a mind map of you, I think, or at least everything that you have said, right? And then I'm gonna have it listen to the audio as well. I haven't had it do that before, but it can do that. I'm gonna have it listen to the audio and see if it concludes the same things, or maybe it thinks that you're more compelling when you talk, right? And so the written version is anyway. So, look, Sean, thank you so much for this great conversation, and we look forward again, both on Commerce Code, but just through Digital Commerce Alliance events and other things, to interacting more on this topic. Thanks.
Thank you, Dan. I appreciate it.
Commerce Code is sponsored by Pentadata, the all-in-one financial data API. Whether it is bank account data, credit card transaction data, or credit reports and credit scores, Pentadata has it all in one simple and easy-to-use API. With coverage of over 6,000 banks, over 200 million credit files, and 60 million merchants, you can get all the data you need for your apps at pentadatainc.com.
Well, that's a wrap on our 3-episode deep dive on intelligent shopping agents. I said to Sean after we turned the microphones off, there are a lot of changes that come along in this industry that could be tectonic, but most of them aren't. Sometimes we can tell that they aren't. That's pretty common, honestly. It's not very often we can tell that they will be tectonic. I am not usually the one for prognostication, but as I said in the show, people talk about what's important and they do what's easy. So much of what fails in digital commerce is failure from friction. And so much of what succeeds is because it's been designed to be super easy. Amazon has been winning on easy for a long time. Google won on ease and simplicity from the start. I think intelligent shopping agents have enormous potential because they have ease of use on their side. So while there are many obstacles between something like Perplexity and retail domination, I'm betting that something in the large language model AI space will be an earthquake, small, medium, or large, for the world of digital commerce before too long. So thanks for joining us on this journey and listening to this series and this deep dive. It has been a lot of fun to create, and I hope you learned as much as I did. Thanks for listening to Commerce Code.
Commerce Code is a bi-weekly podcast bringing you conversations with executives who are leading the way in digital commerce. If you like Commerce Code, your company should join the Digital Commerce Alliance and become part of our mission of advancing trade for good through standard setting, industry networking, conferences, and best practice sharing. Check out our website at www.digcomall.org. On behalf of DCA, have a great week!